He stared at me. I was urging him with my eyes, and he had just wit enough to obey, but with no great humility, plumping down on the deck and folding his arms stubbornly round his knees. The overseer growled,
"I'd take the starch out of that jackanapes right smart if he was mine. You'd be wise, Mr. Prescott, and give that uppity yellow bastard a good dressing down, or he'll have the whole passel of em as bad as hisself. Beds, by Christ, and sassin' back to me. That's the trouble with all these fancy house niggers. They start thinking they white, too, peacocky high and mighties, every last damn one of em. He'll have been brought up among white ladies, I don't doubt, too much damn pettin' when he's young."
He stumped off, and Randolph sneered softly. That gentleman is not without perception. He at least was not brought up among white ladies. White sows, perhaps. He glared up at me. "We are entitled to straw to lie on. Why did you not insist that white scum provide it? Isn't it enough that I am chained up like a beast in this verminous place and fed on nauseating slops? Aren't you meant to protect me?" I wondered if this fellow was insane, for the purblind stupidity with which he overlooked the role he was meant to be playing. He was 5 days from freedom, yet the idiot insisted on drawing attention to himself and provoking trouble. Ordinarily, I'd have taken my boot to him, but he so mystified me that I was alarmed. "Come over by the rail," says I. And when we were standing apart, "Look, haven't you sense enough to keep your mouth shut and your head down? Do you think it matters whether you get straw or not? Do you expect me to take your side against a white man? It'd be the talk of the boat in 5 minutes, you fool. Just you forget your lofty opinion of yourself for once and talk humble, or you'll never see Ohio this trip." "I need no advice from you," he flashed back. "You would better be remembering the duty you've promised to do, which is to take me north in safety than to spend your time in gorging with white trash sluts." It took my breath away. Not just the insolence, but the discovery of how fast news travels among niggers. And there was just a note in his indignation that made me decide to be amused. "What's the matter, Sambo?" says I. "Jealous." If looks could kill, there'd have been a corpse at his feet. "I have no words to express my contempt of you, or of the slatterns you associate with," says he, and his voice was shaking. "But I will not have you endanger my freedom, do you hear? What kind of guardian are you? That swine of an overseer might have provoked me beyond endurance while you were at your beastliness. It is your task to see me to Canada. That is all that matters." There was no piercing this one's arrogance, I saw, not by reason or taunts, so I stuck my face into his. "All that matters, you black mongrel. I'll tell you what matters. And that is that you keep your aping airs to yourself, touch your forelock, and say, 'Yes, massa,' whenever I or any white man talks to you. That way you might get to Canada. You just might." I shook my fist at him. "If you haven't the brain in that ape skull of yours to see that kicking up the kind of shines you've been at today is the surest way of setting us all adrift, if you can't see that, I'll teach it to you, by God. I'll follow that overseer's advice and have you triced up, Mr. Randolph, and they'll take a couple of stone of meat off you with a raw hide. Then maybe you'll learn sense, Mr. Randolph." If you think a quadroon can't go red with rage, you're wrong.
"You wouldn't dare," he choked furiously. "Wouldn't I, though? Don't wager your black ass on that, George, or you'll find you've only half of it left. And what would you do about it, eh? Holler, 'I'm a runaway nigger, and this man is smuggling me to Canada.' Think it over, George, and be wise. Now take off your airs, close your mouth, and get back there among your brothers. Lively now. Cross me or that overseer again, and I'll have the cat to you. I swear it. Jump to it, nigger."
He stood there, sweat running down his face, his chest heaving with passion. For a moment, I thought he would leap at me, but he changed his mind.
"Someday," says he, "someday you shall repent this most bitterly. As God is my witness, you will pay for it. There was no dealing with him, you see. There was a spite and conceit in that man that passed anything I've ever struck. I turned on my heel and strode off.